Hey, everybody, Lady Luck here, and we're celebrating America's 250th birthday. Now, all summer long, I'm going to be celebrating by playing on SpinQuest.com, which is an American-owned social casino. It obviously features over 1,000 slot games and live blackjack, live craps, live bubble craps. Head on over to SpinQuest.com. Get yourself a $30 coin pack for just 10 bucks.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
What's going on, everyone? It's Bluff here, and we're driving through the states in the Bluffmobile, and the best thing that we can do is play our favorite casino-style games on SpinQuest. They have over 1,000 games, including live dealer, blackjack, and craps, with tons of slots and unlimited options. You can get a $30 coin pack for just $10 for new users. Sign up today. Go to SpinQuest.com right now.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
Today on The Grave Talks, The Ghosts of Savannah, Georgia, a conversation with Bridget Pitts and Dylan Jones of the Witching Hour Paranormal Ghost Tour. Savannah, Georgia, wears its history like a ghostly shroud. The city's cobblestone streets and moss-draped oaks are witnesses to centuries of triumphs and tragedies from colonial times to the Civil War. The city is literally built on its dead. Over the years, bloody battles, massive fires, yellow fever epidemics, and hurricanes have taken hundreds and hundreds of lives, leaving behind very unsettled spirits. It's no wonder that in this city of skeletons, the ghosts of history refuse to rest, leaving their mark on a city where the past and the paranormal coexist in haunting harmony. And what better way to experience the hauntings of Savannah than a ghost tour with the Witching Hour Paranormal Ghost Tour, where your tour guides are paranormal investigators, intuitives, and some are even psychics. Today on The Grave Talks, a conversation about haunted Savannah with paranormal investigator, clairvoyant, and owner of The Witching Hour, Bridget Pitts, and parapsychologist, Dylan Jones. So Bridget and Dylan, thank you so much for joining me today. And Bridget Pitts, you're the owner of The Witching Hour Paranormal Ghost Tour. How did that come about? Did you just kind of something you'd always wanted to do, or opportunity arose, something you were interested in? How did it come about?
Honestly, a little bit of both. So I've had paranormal experiences since I was 4 years old, for as long as I can remember, but had some really terrifying experiences growing up on Tybee Island. And I hated the paranormal, actually. So some people would call me clairvoyant and clairsentient, where I could see spirits, feel emotions. I do tarot card readings and tea leaf readings, but I did not entertain it. I hated all the TV shows, and my parents used to watch them when I was growing up, and they said, "That's going to be you one day." And I said, "No, it's not. I don't like it." And then when I was like 16, I started urban exploring with a bunch of my friends, going to cemeteries, and I kind of slowly fell in love with it, and it was a hobby. And in my early 20s, occasionally I would like work with other paranormal societies, but around COVID, I was ghost hunting with one of my friends, and one of her friends, I guess their boss, approached me and said, "Hey, you're doing all that and you know a lot about the history of Savannah. I want to do tours too. Why don't we team up?" And of course I was like, "Yeah, we can try it." And it was just like a part-time thing that I was doing because I enjoyed ghost hunting. And then it just kind of took off when I was a paralegal. I left that and decided to just focus full-time on the paranormal. And it's a huge passion of mine.
I get that too. When I was a kid, I lived in a haunted house and I didn't want anything to do with that. But then throughout my life, I also feel drawn to it. So I don't know what that is, but I've talked to so many people who are just like that. you know, there's something about it that you're still fascinated by, and especially with you and your other abilities that, yeah, you never did have a choice. I think your parents were right.
Well, it's so funny because my family, they never were really open about like talking about the paranormal, ironically enough. And then when I started getting older, you know, my mom said, well, her grandma, my great grandmother, used to read the tea leaves back in Ireland because I have dual citizenship of here in Ireland because of her. And, you know, my dad's side, like all of his sisters have gifts as well. And, you know, both my parents are 71. And so I guess they come from a different era where, you know, that was more so frowned upon to like verbally discuss those topics. And like still to this day, occasionally you get that backlash. I'm like, you know, I tell you ghost stories and stuff, but some people do get a little bit weary about it. I remember when I first started doing tours, I remember I had people who would start sobbing in the beginning when I'd pull out dowsing rods. And I'm like, I promise I'm not a witch like that, you know?
Oh,
like,
yeah.
I'm a worshiper, you know? And I was like, well, I'm born and raised Irish Catholic, so...
So we can call on some of those spirits if need be.
Yeah. I think it just varies.
And Dylan, once they hear Dylan speak, you'll realize you don't have the same background. But how did you and Bridget end up meeting then?
I'm a parapsychologist at Robert Gordon University in Aberdeen in Scotland, although I'm from Wales in the UK. And I started my PhD in January 2020. And I always wanted to compare the media effects of the paranormal. So the research is looking at the media representation of paranormal phenomena and research and whether or not it affects the behavior of modern ghost hunting groups. So I wanted to compare those in the US with the UK. So I'd already built up a whole lot of contacts over the years with groups in particularly the New England area, but I had a checklist of places that I always wanted to visit because of its history and haunted heritage, and Savannah was right at the top of that list. So in May 2022, I spent some time in the Boston area and then flew down to Savannah. And on my third night there, the group that I was observing said, oh, we're going to do a ghost tour. Do you fancy going along? And I was like, of course, I absolutely love ghost stories and ghost tours. And we started the ghost tour in Wright Square in Savannah. And that's where I met Bridget for the first time.
Now, that was kind of one of those, the universe put you in the right place at the right time moments. Because if you don't mind me sharing, Halloween, your relationship kind of turned. And it looks like it's going to be long term.
Yes. I mean, I proposed to Bridget on Halloween at the start of a ghost tour, which is the place where we met. And it felt like being Halloween because we're both passionate about the paranormal, but from two different perspectives. And it was funny that for Christmas last year, Bridget bought me a book by the author Paulo Coelho called The Alchemist. And in there is a line that I love you because the universe conspired to bring us together. That was the gist of the line. And it just seemed that it did.
It really did, didn't it?
It did.
It's so romantic. I love romantic stories. And especially like the paranormal kind of brought the two of you together very much so, really. I think that's great. So then, Dylan, will you end up moving here? Or you guys got some logistics to figure out?
There are some logistics to figure out at the moment. There's the whole visa process that we're going through at the moment. But my intention is to be able to have that flexibility to do things on both sides of the Atlantic. Because of the area of my research and what I'm looking at, specifically when it comes to the media aspect of the paranormal, but also how ghost hunters behave, the equipment they use, and educating people about what you see on TV isn't, in my view, the right way to go about investigating, that there is a scientific method to use. So the sort of the educational side of it is something I'm particularly passionate about.
And with your history, do you feel you would fall in the line of skeptic or believer, or can you even declare either because you sort of want to stay in the middle, you know, with what you study?
I think it's very important to emphasize what a skeptic actually is rather than being a cynic. A cynic is going to be somebody who just does not accept any possibility. A believer accepts it wholeheartedly. Now, a skeptic is somebody who is open-minded, who is questioning, who is critical. And my job is to be all of those things. I'm not going to accept everything that everybody tells me as being the truth.
Mm-hmm.
Because of my background as a police officer for 18 years, you have to question everything that happens. You take into account what the witness has experienced, and you're looking to understand what it is that the witness has experienced. You're not there to go into a location to have a spooky time. And I think it's to have an opening and questioning mind, accepting the possibility that ghosts do exist, that haunting phenomena exists, but also having that balance that there are a wealth, a plethora of natural explanations which can explain the things that a witness has experienced. And it's the same when it comes to people with what they believe to be psychic gifts. You have to have that safeguard, because there have been many instances where a psychic or somebody claiming to be clearly is not. Mm-hmm. So you have to be having those checks and balances.
And Bridget, with your background, I'm just assuming actually that you would fall into the believer realm, but I think having a healthy sense of skepticism is good in what you do.
It does, because the way that I look at things is, for example, I've gone and done paranormal investigations at people's homes, and I like to walk into a place and not automatically assume that it's haunted, you know, because sometimes what if there's something so much deeper than something that's spooky and supernatural? It could vary from, like, you know, carbon monoxide poisoning, or if somebody does have something going on in their personal life, you know, it's about trying to help somebody, not just in the spooky aspect, but if there is something that needs to dive deeper into, then, you know, finding somebody that can help them. Because I personally, like, if there's somebody who has like a mental illness, I can't help them. When I dealt with somebody who did have issues, you know, their family was actually contacting me. And I did believe that there were some things going on in the house, whether it was from them manifesting it, things like that, but like to have their family involved, where it's like, hey, you know, this is what's kind of going on. And it's me speculating, but you might want to try to have them seek some help more than what they already have. And, you know, I'm a believer when it comes to the paranormal, but there's so many variables when it comes to the paranormal. I believe that people can manifest stuff and talk it into existence. If they do have mental health crisis, you know, like a mental health crisis going on, that could stem from it too. And I've kind of noticed that. Or if there is something like a haunted object, cool, let's talk about it, you know. But like for an experience that I had where I was on the fence about, you know, going to this person's home, because I knew that they also suffered a little bit from schizophrenia. And I was talking to their family when I first walked into the house, you know, just generally asking questions about what was going on, their backgrounds, their beliefs. And then I heard growling coming from behind me in the corner of the room. So I just jotted it down and I was like, okay, that's pretty interesting. And, you know, we kind of progressed from there. But there's so much more that has to be looked at. And like, there's things that I can't, you know, basically help them with, you know. So like when it comes to like the TV shows, you know, and they're dealing with people who might be having an issue, they technically can't work on certain aspects. They would have to bring in a doctor. You can't diagnose somebody, mm-hmm. you know, but sorry, a diagnosis there. Okay, I identified. I'm not going to judge you on it. But let's just look beyond that and kind of go from there. But for me personally, I do believe that, you know, when it comes to like communicating with spirits, right? I don't always feel like like if a loved one comes and tries to contact me for somebody that comes on my tour, it's like an idea that pops in my head, or it's this feeling, and I just have to blurt it out to them. When it comes to, let's say, the Sorrel Weed House that we do investigation tours at, the other night was pretty like jarring because I wouldn't be the only one that would hear a disembodied voice or like a full blown voice actually communicating with us, which I found that to be fascinating. But, when we'd switch and rotate out people, I would actually have full blown, you know, responses that some people wouldn't hear, but then others have actually heard it with me. So it's just interesting. And like Dylan talked about a book called Ghosted, and he always brings it up where there are people that have certain personality types and how parapsychologists are actually looking into that to see, okay, well, some people have paranormal experiences while others don't. And is it something that is affecting the brain? And where does that like stand for certain people? Like, Dylan can explain it a little bit better since he's the scientist. But for me on the supernatural, I'm just like, I think everybody has gifts. It just depends on either A, people working on them, or how strong, or, you know, how somebody wants to tap into it. If people don't want to, then that's a personal choice, you know. But for me, I would never want to turn it off completely. And I've actually talked to other like older psychics that they used to turn it off and then they would turn it back on. And they said, you know, you just kind of have to leave it and you learn how to shut it down for, you know, your sanity, but you never let it go away. And that's what I kind of do as well.
Because I can't imagine like how your brain would work.
It's exhausting sometimes.
I would think like, it would be.
People don't understand. I'm like, you know, I can tap into people. I'll call them and say, hey, I know something's wrong, you know, and they're like, I was literally just like dealing with something. Or I'd be right on the money when I call them. I'm like, what did they do? You know, but it does get exhausting from time to time. And so I'm always having to recharge my batteries or kind of have that introvert and extrovert kind of happy medium of like sometimes I just have to hide away for a little bit and go relax and then go back out into the world and turn it back on.
And, you know, I was talking with someone a while back, a psychic, and, you know, I think a lot of us just, you get that little feeling and you don't go with it. Like, oh, I should call Barb. And then you don't. Or maybe I should text her and you do. And then she's like, oh my gosh, I'm so glad you reached out.
Yeah.
So, but a lot of times we ignore that voice. And I think if more people were to listen to that, they might realize they have more of a gift than they think they do.
Yeah, because we're a lot more connected than what people realize.
Mm-hmm. Do you guys work together at all? Are you in Savannah, Dylan?
Yes, still? I'm currently okay. In Savannah right now.
Because I knew you had to have been since you were, you know, proposed on Halloween. But I didn't know if you were back home yet.
I don't go back until the beginning of January.
So then do you work together on the tours with Bridget?
I go along as a guest. So I'm not working. I just go along and... What is really interesting is that the guests who are on Bridget's tour get to have a different perspective. And it's, in fact, I think it's definitely the only ghost tour in Savannah which has an actual parapsychologist on it, an actual scientist. But I'm pretty certain that it's the only one in the United States as well.
And it's interesting, too, because a lot of times when you take the ghost tour, you're taking it with somebody who they hear the stories that you're going to tell. And I don't feel like these people have any abilities other than maybe they're really good storytellers. But you have put together a team that sounds really interesting, Bridget. Like, so you're getting more than just stories, I think.
Yeah, and so it's not just me and Dylan. So our guides, and it's been really hard to find guides. I've been doing this for the last 4 years, but I have some fantastic guides where they all have either a gift or experiences or knowledge in something that they do. and they do have a passion for it. But when it comes to me and Dylan, I'm the spiritual aspect and he's the science aspect. So it's a good happy medium for, you know, people that are believers. You know, I'm there to help discuss, you know, experiences, what I think it is. And then you have Dylan, who's the scientist who likes to debunk equipment. You know, he's not a big fan of the equipment side. And I don't mind the equipment. Like, I like dowsing rods, you know, that's like my number one thing, and pendulums and, you know, using black mirrors and scrying, for example. But when it comes to like the thermal image cameras that we use, K2s, spirit boxes, ovulus, I like those forms of equipment. But when it comes to certain aspects, yeah, there's things that need to be debunked, you know, and you have to take equipment with a grain of salt. And I've noticed when you're more so relaxing and you're just kind of doing mundane things, that's when you get paranormal experiences. It's kind of like fishing, you know, when it happens, it's going to happen a lot, it's going to pop off. But, you know, trying to take a step back and not have distractions as much, it's quite nice. We still use equipment because I like the ovulus, and sometimes it says interesting things. And that's like what TV shows like Ghost Adventures and Taps use, where it's like a talk to text for ghosts, you know. And I find that to be interesting, where I've had people who have communicated with their loved ones through it, and it was really spot on. I had one where it was actually quite sad, where we were walking by the cemetery and the ovulus said fire and crash. And as it said fire and crash, about a couple minutes later, one of the women on my tour got a phone call that, you know, I guess her son's friend's father passed away in a fiery car crash. And so it was just, you know, sometimes it's like, okay, well, that's like really weird timing, but it's happened quite often where I look at things from a different perspective than what Dylan would. Because, again, he is the skeptic. He's not a cynic, but he is a skeptic for certain things. But there are some things that are interesting where it's like, okay, that's pretty interesting. Moving on, you know.
And with both of your backgrounds, too, growing up where you've grown up, because Savannah is known for being one of the most haunted cities in the U.S., and then Dylan, where exactly are you from?
I'm from Wales.
Wales,
in the United Kingdom. So obviously you've got England, Scotland, Wales, and Northern Ireland.
Okay.
So the four separate countries. So I grew up in Wales. And Wales and the rest of the UK has an incredible haunted heritage.
Right.
There are so many ghost stories.
So many. And so I think that's interesting. Both of you have grown up in a place places that are known to be very haunted. And I think it's interesting that it's accepted by the city. You know, Savannah doesn't run away from that title at all. Do you kind of feel like that, Bridget?
Yeah, it's a bit of my identity. And, you know, it's like I always tell people, you know, ironically enough, I ended up growing up in the most haunted city in the United States. And I mean, it's a city built on its dead.
Literally.
And they constantly find more and more. Like a couple months ago, by the mansion at Forsyth Park, while they were doing construction out there, they struck more bodies over there. 2019 was a huge year when they were doing more construction on Broughton Street, which is the main strip of the downtown historic district. And they paved the roads before, but they decided to dig around, I guess, to lay pipes. And all along the Broughton Street area, they found bodies. It's because it was mentioned and they kind of blew over it. Oh, we struck bodies. And then people were wondering, well, who are they? And so, you know, they ended up finding out that it was not only indigenous people, but enslaved people for certain slave cemeteries that were at certain points, because Savannah was a lot different back in the day than what it is now. And so it's just finding these new discoveries of what is what. And I mean, people have found bodies in the walls. when that happens, it stops, you know, stops everything in your life, and it has to be investigated, and then how to proceed forward. And yeah, I mean, sometimes they do stay where they lay, though. Usually they don't disrupt too often. Like, there's certain areas downtown where they'll lay them lower, you know, so they're still in the same areas, but you walk, drive, sleep, and eat on top of the dead everywhere. Like, I don't think there's hardly any point in Savannah that you're not going to be stepping on somebody's grave.
And you have no idea.
When I lived downtown, I lived downtown for 2 years. I just moved from downtown September 1st, and I was actually renting on top of the original cemetery from 1733 till 1750 before Colonial Park Cemetery opened up. And, you know, there's about 1,500 bodies over there. And my front next door neighbor is the Jewish cemetery from the original settlers from 1733, 1734. And there's thousands buried in the roadway. And that's when I walk out of my front door. You know,
wow.
And it was different. I had a couple poltergeist experiences where I had this massive painting hanging above my fireplace. And, you know, there's a mantle there. And it was 11 o'clock in the morning, and we're sitting at the desk. Dylan went to go do something, and this massive painting flung from behind me, missed me by an inch, and lands on the ground. But none of the trinkets that were sitting on top of the fireplace mantle, not a single thing moved. And so it had to have lifted up.
Right.
And of course, you know, Dylan cracked a joke at me because the night before I was playing with a Ouija board that I got. And it was a birthday present. And so I was like, well, I'm gonna play with it. And of course, I'm on top of the cemetery. I'm going to do everything I shouldn't do. And you know, I started having some weird experiences. There was one that, you know, Dylan saw, I didn't, where I guess it looked like a tail. He's not 100% sure what it was, but we were watching TV in the daytime, and he gets up and he was like, it was so interesting. He said, it looked like something that, you know, moved around the corner. And we didn't know what it was. We still to this day don't know what it was, because I was like, well, that's weird. I've never seen, you know, like anything that could like mimic, I don't know, a cat or something.
Right.
Cause it wasn't Pipkin. It wasn't my rabbit, you know, like it was this black thing. I've had my blender get thrown across the room, you know, and when I first moved in there, I heard a woman sighing in the living room. And then I was talking to one of my friends when we were planning a trip, and I had them on speakerphone, and they could hear somebody talking in the background. And they were like, are you by yourself? And I was like, yeah, why? They're like, I hear somebody.
And you're not hearing
that's
it.
Happened quite often, where people would hear somebody talking in the background when I'd be alone. So it's interesting. It was a very interesting place, but I believe in energy.
Mm-hmm.
And It drained me. It really did drain me living there. I could never separate my life from a work. So I'm a lot happier moving away from all of that and finding a little bit more peace, because it was a constant, you know, kind of battle going on over there.
In Savannah, the history of Savannah, there's been a lot of really horrific things, like yellow fever outbreak that just killed thousands of people. You know, there was massive fires, and more than one I was reading about. And of course, the Civil War, and there was bloody battles. And so there's all of this trauma that's happened in the city for hundreds of years.
Oh, yeah. And, you know, when you start looking, you had numerous yellow fever outbreaks, running out of room to bury people, you know. And where do you put them? You stack them all on top of one another. And then you had the Revolutionary War, the Siege of Savannah, which was one of the second bloodiest battles in the Revolution. And it happened here. And it was a nightmare. You know, when you look at it, it's so sad. There was a lot of women and children that were killed. You know, it was the it wasn't very skilled, well put together. You had enslaved people, indentured servants. And, you know, when it comes to the Irish here, when we started doing some research for, you know, Wright Square and Alice Riley, the first woman in the state of Georgia to be executed by hanging, you know, they used to whip them in the streets. They actually dragged a woman down Bull Street by a horse-drawn carriage. And so it has a lot of history, and a lot of people don't dive into like all of it. You know, there's a lot more than what people actually realize, you know? And, yeah, if you have any questions of like certain points, you know, I'd love to talk about them.
Well, since you just brought up Wright Square, that would be an interesting one to talk about, because it looks, when you look at pictures, it looks like a beautiful park area.
It is. That's where I got proposed to.
Dylan. And that's so sweet.
See, because I lived off of Wright Square. And it's so funny because I've always had my full circle moments in Wright Square, because I always crack a joke in the beginning of my tour that, you know, ironically enough, I've been kicked off tours since I was a kid, you know, like correcting tour guides. And it happened in Wright Square by where Tomachichi's Rock is. And, you know, that's where Alice Riley was executed, because that's the hanging square. And, you know, going back to the history of it, when you go to Wright Square and you see that big, beautiful monument in the middle, which is the Gordon Monument, you know, right beneath it is Tomachichi, who is the Yamacraw chief of the Low Creek Tribe Nation. You know, he helped James Oglethorpe, the founder of Savannah, make Savannah become what it is today, you know, and he was built on top of. And people used to always claim that his rock over there, his granite boulder, that's where he was buried, but that was incorrect. He's not buried beneath that. He's actually buried beneath the Gordon Monument. And we got in an argument with the tour guide because I said, well, that's not true. He's actually buried over there. And they're like, oh, you don't know what you're talking about. And, you know, my family's like, there's literally a plaque over there that explains it, that Tomachichi is buried beneath that monument. So they kicked us all off. But right where the courthouse is down there, it's the Tomachichi Federal Courthouse. That was where the original magistrate court from 1733 was, because it used to be called Percival Square, then it was Courthouse Square, and then it became Wright Square later on. And so if you were sentenced to go to jail or be executed, that was the area. And where the CVS pharmacy is down there, that's the oldest jail in the state of Georgia. My friend Trisha lived there, so I did a mini investigation there, because some of the studio apartments are the jails.
And what? They're the cells?
Yeah. Imagine living in a box. So metal on the ceiling, surrounded by nothing but brick and ripped off stucco because it's trendy. And they had a massive turnover rate. Like, they could barely keep people in there.
I wouldn't think there'd be a lot of natural light in there. It's a jail cell.
Yeah, it's like, think of like, you know, the typical lights that you'd have that you just make do with, you know. My friend paid $2,300 for the high rise ceilings, which was a regular one bedroom. And, you know, her sink faucets would turn on and off. Her cat's Biscuit and Skippy would hiss at things we couldn't see. I had my hair pulled in there, and she had this record player that was a plug in, and it would constantly play music on its own. And she got fed up one night when she was drinking a little bit of wine, and she unplugs it and it continued to play music. And she calls me panicking. She ended up moving from there because, like I said, some places that I feel that have like that bad juju or like it is haunted, it can affect your energy. And She ended up moving out of there because she couldn't deal with it. So she moved over to Oglethorpe Square, which best of luck to her over there. But when it comes back to, you know, being executed in the actual square back in the 1700s, I've heard people talk about like the trees and how you were hung from them, which they did use trees, but they discontinued them in the 1700s as well. And they put a podium up in the middle before Tomachichi passed away, and you'd gather around it like it was a park, and people would bring their families and watch you hang.
Isn't that interesting? Because they didn't have TV back then, and it just seems it's like that was entertainment. Let's pack a lunch, and they're doing a hanging today. Let's go watch.
Pretty dark, isn't it?
Yeah.
Public executions definitely were entertainment. The way you kind of look at things nowadays, we of course consider it barbaric, but to them it was just normal. Like Alice Riley being the first woman to be executed in that square, it always hits a sweet spot to me because, you know, I'm Irish. I've heard so many different things and how people tried to construe her story in all these weird types of ways. And I'm like, well, there is documentation of what did happen. And you'll hear outlandish things. And I'm like, well, you got to remember, she's a real person. She's a real human being. When she was executed, she actually gave birth in her jail cell because her execution was postponed until she gave birth. And then after she gave birth, she named her baby James after the founder of Savannah to try to get a pardon, and that didn't work. And of course, they ended up executing her a couple weeks out, which was January 19th, 1735. And then me and Dylan actually found some documentation of when her baby died a couple weeks after. And we found out the actual date, which was what, February 14th, Dylan? 15th. February 15th, 1735. So the baby didn't live long after her execution. So it's a very interesting kind of story that's always been really sad, because you'll hear people that have claimed that she was a witch because her final words were spoken in Gaelic, which is the Irish language. Dylan likes to talk about how there were several different types of languages that were spoken in Savannah, and Welsh, him being Welsh, was one of them. It's always been an interesting story, and people have actually written plays about Alice Riley because it is really sad. You know, she wanted to see her baby before she was executed, and they denied her that right.
Oh, that's really heartbreaking. And she was in a really bad situation in life, because she came here to find a better life and didn't, and ends up with basically being kind of like an indentured servant, would you say?
Well, so there was a massive boat that was heading to the New World from Ireland with all these indentured servants, and a lot of people were sick and dying on the boat, and somehow her and Richard White, her common-law husband, managed to survive. And the boat, I believe, was supposed to be going up north, and somehow it took a wrong turn for Savannah. And even though you technically weren't allowed to own enslaved people, you weren't allowed to have, you know, Catholics here, they made an exception for the indentures. They said, we'll bring them on. We'll take them. And so when they got here, they get assigned to an awful man, William Wise, who he was from England, but he lied through his teeth in order to get to Savannah. And he hired a couple working girls, one to play his wife and another one to play his daughter. And he actually got caught in that lie when he got here to Savannah. And he became a farmer, but he was forced to live across the river on Hutchison Island. And he had to boat into the downtown area. And that was by James Edward Oglethorpe's orders, because he thought it would have been an insult to King George to bring him back to England, to deport him. So he didn't get deported, and he wasn't a good man. And then eventually, you know, Richard White and Alice Riley decided to, you know, find a way to kill him, because William was very abusive mentally, physically, sexually. And so they had enough of it. And some even question if the baby that Alice had was even William Wise's baby. And so this is where it's always blurred lines, because some people state that it could have been Richard White's baby, but it could have been at the same time William Wise. And there's numerous documentations, but we'll never know because there's no DNA testing, you know?
There are reports of people seeing her. Do you find any credibility to that? And that wraps up part one of our conversation with Bridget Pitts and Dylan Jones of the Witching Hour Paranormal Ghost Tour. For more information on their ghost tours of Savannah, visit their website, witchinghoursavannah.com. You can also find them on Facebook. If you'd like access to all of our episodes, including the archive and advance episodes, everything commercial free, become a Gravekeeper. You can sign up on Apple Podcasts, where you can try it 3 days free. You could also go to patreon.com/thegravetalks. I'm Carol Hughes, and for all of us here at The Grave Talks, thank you so much for listening.
What's going on, everyone? It's Bluff here, and you know what's more American than America's 250th birthday? Supporting American-owned companies like SpinQuest, America's number one social casino with over 1,000 games like Live Dealer Blackjack and Craps. They're offering new users a $30 coin package for just $10. Go to SpinQuest.com and sign up today.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
Hey guys, Lady Luck here. Are you going on any road trips this summer? I know I'm going to be going on a bunch of road trips. And being that I'm going to be passenger princess, I love playing on SpinQuest.com. SpinQuest has all of my favorite slot games, live blackjack, live craps. Head on over to SpinQuest right now and get yourself a $30 coin pack for just $10.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
Forget whatever plans you have this weekend because you're staying at home and playing on SpinQuest. And there's never been a better time to sign up than right now. New users get $30 coin packs for just $10. All the table games you love with hundreds of slot games and real cash prizes. That's at SpinQuest.com. SpinQuest.com.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
Forget whatever plans you have this weekend because you're staying at home and playing on SpinQuest. And there's never been a better time to sign up than right now. New users get $30 coin packs for just $10. All the table games you love with hundreds of slot games and real cash prizes. That's at SpinQuest.com. SpinQuest.com.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
Happy birthday, America. It's time to celebrate and play your favorite Las Vegas casino games by American-owned SpinQuest.com. What's better than fireworks and American pie? Hitting a blackjack in the palm of your hand, and you won't lose your fingers. Over 1,000 games, including slots and live dealers. And $30 coin packs are on sale for $10. SpinQuest.com. By American players, for American players.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
What's going on, everyone? It's Bluff here, and we're driving through the states in the Bluffmobile, and the best thing that we can do is play our favorite casino-style games on SpinQuest. They have over 1,000 games, including Live Dealer, Blackjack, and Craps, with tons of slots and unlimited options. You can get a $30 coin pack for just $10 for new users. Sign up today. Go to SpinQuest.com right now.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
Hanging out at the pool is great. Relaxing and playing Vegas-style games on my phone at the same time. Drink in one hand and a blackjack in the other. It's all at SpinQuest. Over 1,000 games, including your favorite slots and table games. Be cool with this summer special. New players get $30 coin packs for $10 at SpinQuest.com.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
What's going on, everyone? It's Bluff here, and we're driving through the states in the Bluffmobile, and the best thing that we can do is play our favorite casino-style games on SpinQuest. They have over 1,000 games, including Live Dealer, Blackjack, and Craps, with tons of slots and unlimited options. You can get a $30 coin pack for just $10 for new users. Sign up today. Go to spinquest.com right now.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit spinquest.com for more details.
Hanging out at the pool is great. Relaxing and playing Vegas-style games on my phone at the same time. Drink in one hand and a blackjack in the other. It's all at SpinQuest. Over 1,000 games, including your favorite slots and table games. Be cool with this summer special. New players get $30 coin packs for 10 at SpinQuest.com.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.